Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And we're talking with Kevin Healy, Vice President of Human Resources at St. Mary's Healthcare System in Lewiston, Maine. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, you know, healthcare is in full transition right now with a lot of the changes that are going on. Could you present to us exactly what you're seeing in the industry today, especially with everything that's happening?
Sure. I'll take a crack at that. It's pretty volatile, I guess would be the way to describe it. From a HR perspective, when I think about the challenges we're facing, a lot of it goes back to finding the right skill sets. One of the things that we struggle with daily is having the right people with the right skill sets and trying to fill those hot jobs. And we have a lot of them, David. There's kind of a shortage, if you will, of people who have big, long names, polysonographers, x-ray technicians, and all kinds of mid-level providers. So finding those jobs in a very competitive environment is difficult at best. And at the same time that we're trying to find the right skill sets, there are people who are more traditional workers, clerical folks, administrative people, folks like that, that are perhaps not seeing their skills improve or upgrade, and as technology improves, it's tough for them to keep up. So we have some that are being downgraded, or we don't need as much of those types of skills without an upgrade, and there are others that we just can't seem to get enough of. So it's very volatile.
Well, you made the statement a few seconds ago that technology is now playing a big role, and certainly anybody that's gone to the doctor or to a hospital for any reason whatsoever would tell you that technology is now a big part of it. Is part of the challenge the fact that they just don't know those skills, or they are not easily adaptable to those skills? Or what is the real challenge with the technology piece of it?
Well, I think it's multifaceted. First of all, there are many people who are working in healthcare that have been there for a long time, especially in Maine. We're one of the top three oldest populations in the country. So when you look at the typical worker in healthcare, more often than not, you're going to find someone who's been there a long time. So we have long service people, and when you do the same job for many years, I think it's easy for people to let their skills, especially the technology skills, fade away, or at least not, you know, get them up to where they need to be. Rusty's probably the wrong term because new stuff comes in all the time. But unless you're conscientious about upgrading your skills and trying to stay on top of the newest technology, and if you're counting on the employer to do all of that, you know, to send you to training and supply you the new software, which we do, but you've got to take a little bit of an effort on your part to do it as well, you're going to fall behind. And so that's one piece of it when I say it's multifaceted. The other is we may have somebody who is very comfortable and very reliable and knows all the latest things, but things are changing so rapidly that even those folks with the current set of skills can see those fly out the window in a year or two as new technology comes in. So, you know, some of the older folks who haven't done a good job of keeping up, and even those people who have kept up can see things change overnight. One example of that would be electronic medical records. You know, that is a really big push as far as improving the ability of your doctor and the ability of the healthcare organization to track your needs, to know who you are, and to do a better job of providing the services. Well, electronic medical records come in all kinds of forms. So if you're working in a health system out of state and you come to Maine, you may apply for a job here and find that the records that we're using are totally different than where you came from in Virginia or Texas or wherever. So it's not the same everywhere. It's not universal, and people haven't kept their skills up the way that they should. And even if you had, it changes overnight. So good luck with that, huh?
Yeah, no, it really is a challenge in terms of the differences that are out there, and certainly an understanding by, you know, someone that's coming into state or maybe even leaving state and saying, oh, I have this great skill, and only to find out that they don't use, for example, Epic or one of the big healthcare systems.
Exactly.
May not be using one of those type of all-encompassing medical record system. So it is a challenge. There's no question about it. And, you know, the employee who is trying to stay ahead of the curve may think they are ahead of the curve, only to find out that they don't actually know exactly this system coming into.
Yep. I would agree. And the way that you, as an employee, I think are best able to deal with it is to stay informed. There is, you know, a tendency on people, you know, when they're off for the day, they're off for the day. Well, I make an effort to read the journals, you know, check with my colleagues, make sure that I know what's going on, because things change so rapidly that, you know, I want some early warning on what the changes are. And I think healthcare employees in general would be well advised to do that. Otherwise, it's easy to get lulled into "I'm fine," only to find out later that all of a sudden your skills are rusty.
When we're talking about healthcare, there's certainly been a lot of consolidation in the industry, you know, larger systems, and this is a nationwide trend, certainly not just here in the local Maine area. Are you seeing that being helpful in terms of finding talent, or are you finding that actually is a hindrance?
Great question.
Are you a lawyer by any chance? I'm just curious. No, you know, whenever we have lawyers on, they always go, well, could be.
But I guess I could be. But the answer really is both. When you look at the various circumstances, consolidation can be helpful in some cases, because when you think about the workforce, I just said, it's difficult to find all the trained techs and all the, you know, the skill sets that we need. And let's just use radiology as an example. If you consolidate radiology services and you're able then to be focused on a central location in a community, and you're not necessarily dispersing and, you know, diluting the available talent, then that's helpful. At the same time, the service that you may offer could be diminished because, well, let's just look at Maine as a rural state. We have a lot of small health care centers around the state, and then, you know, the larger cities have a hospital or two. And if those smaller facilities don't have the capabilities to provide service immediately, then I think, you know, it's a diminishment. Even though it may take more to staff those areas, it takes more talent and skills to staff those areas, you at least then have those skills out where they're needed when an emergency happens. So it's a two-edged sword. Consolidation will help us in some ways find talent, focus it where it needs to be. But by focusing it where it needs to be, when something happens elsewhere, you're not as not as equipped to handle it.
What are you seeing coming out of the universities across the country? You know, we have certainly new physician or, you know, new providers that are coming out into the industry, and they're saddled with, let's be honest, some serious debt coming out of medical school.
Yes.
They're dealing with not only the loans, but you're dealing with some insurance costs that are huge from a liability perspective. And they're certainly looking at hospitals, healthcare systems, maybe even their own practice. How does that factor into being able to find great talent, especially in maybe in the doctor levels?
Yeah, it is a different world than it was just 10 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, David, when a doctor would pretty much hang out their shingle, you know, to use the old terms. They'd have their own office, they'd be independent, they'd hire staff, and they would go into practice. Boy, in 10 years' time, there aren't that many physicians who are now independent. There's been a tendency, a huge shift, for physicians to become employed by hospitals, by healthcare centers, by medical groups, you know, by a larger entity. So the independent physician is rare and getting rarer. So when I go back to your question of, you know, coming out of the universities, what are the new physicians facing? Well, they are facing debt and huge amounts, hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes, and they are not necessarily going into business for themselves or working for a single physician practice. They're going to work for, you know, a large entity like a hospital or a healthcare center. And on the good side, that provides some stability. On the bad side, it becomes a very competitive situation where you're paid a salary as opposed to setting up your own practice and working 6 days a week, 14 hours a day if you have to get as many patients through to help pay down your debt. You know, those days are pretty much gone. So what happens is a lot of the physicians do end up with a tremendous amount of student debt. And that then impacts where they practice or where they tend to look for a job. When you but also quite a bit better pay when you work in a Boston or a New York or a D.C. than if you were to work in Lewiston or Portland or Bangor. So we have a disadvantage competing for that talent because they carry a heavy debt load, and they're looking to pay that down, just like any normal person would. So we've got to do even more to get them to come here. And we're not alone in that. Most rural states are in the same situation. So the world has changed. We are now seeing them mostly work for larger employers, and then you compete as a large employer with not just other folks across town, but across the country for that talent. It's a difficult challenge, but so far we've been able to do it because we have targeted our recruitment efforts towards people who, how would I put this, are in love with the L.L. Bean image of Maine and, you know, love the outdoors and love the mountains. So, you know, the other advantage we have for these younger positions and mid-level providers coming in is that life is, you know, a balance for them, and they want to balance their life and enjoy the outdoors. So we have an advantage there that offsets some of the financial disadvantage we're at when we're recruiting against major metro areas.
You know, you're talking about hiring and certainly finding the necessary talent that's out there. And this can be more even on a national question. What really can HR professionals in the medical world really do to effectively recruit that necessary talent that's out there? I mean, what are some of the things that you would say are top things that they need to look at? I'm not talking geographically. I'm talking, you know, in what they really need to look at to bring talent to their facility.
You know, the thing I've learned after, gosh, almost three decades doing human resource work is that there's, regardless of your profession or the industry you're in, that most people that you're trying to recruit, of course, are always interested in compensation and, you know, is it a good school system and so forth for your family, but really what it comes down to is they're interested in the culture of your organization. Can I be happy there? Will I feel like I belong? Do I fit in? You know, is it possible for me to develop relationships with coworkers and fellow physicians and, you know, really feel like I'm making a difference, part of the organization? And all of that comes back to culture, you know, and how you manage your day-to-day business and how you treat your people. And, you know, really that's what it comes down to. And I think it's almost universal, maybe even more important for the, you know, the hard-to-get hot jobs, the skill sets, because they can go anywhere. So they're less likely to tolerate, you know, just an okay environment. You know, they're looking for the best fit, the best chemistry, the best culture that they can get. And I think that's universal. So your question is, what can HR do? I think HR has tremendous influence on being able to showcase, explain, and make it known what the culture is, and to highlight, you know, the good things that are happening within your organization when it comes to recruiting. You take it outside of recruiting, HR has a tremendous opportunity to influence how that culture is sustained. You know, when employees get in trouble, when they need special consideration, when people communicate and talk to each other. I mean, the role that HR plays in that is, you know, a catalytic role that can make a real difference.
No, you're absolutely right. And actually, you know, that answer talks to all HR professionals in any profession, to be honest with you. It's not just the healthcare world. I mean, culture is absolutely essential today, and probably one of the things that, you know, we talk about certainly on the recruiting side of the business from a recruiter's perspective, that's probably the first thing is the fit, right? The key fit that you're going to have with an organization. And so, you know, skills, yes, check the box. They have them, they can do them, but can they integrate with this organization, and can they fit, and can they, you know, create, enhance, I should say, not more create, but enhance that environment and fit in with the culture that's there. You're absolutely correct on that. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates, and we're talking with Kevin Healy. You know, one of the things that it's interesting, and I know you have a case study that you'd like to talk about, and I think that people will be very interested in knowing that sometimes the recession and sometimes the economy or macro things affect what we think will happen in an industry, what we think will happen from a hiring perspective. And so I'm going to let you fill in the blanks here, but that was kind of like a little teaser to say what you're going to be doing today.
Sure. Well, I can give you a pretty good example of what you're referring to. When I think about HR and trying to be proactive and forecast and project what's likely to happen, we often feel like we you know, have some certainty out a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then it gets grayer the farther out you get, of course. None of us have crystal balls, but we think because of our experience and looking at various metrics and indicators, you know, we can do a pretty good job of forecasting what's going to happen over the next couple of years when it comes to workforce management, workforce development. But I'm giving you an example of how that doesn't always work out, and you always have to have a plan B. We looked at the demographics of our nursing workforce not that long ago, 2005-2006 range, and the thing that we found was that our nursing workforce was similar to the population in Maine, and that it was getting older, and one of the older workforces in the country. And the assumption, because nursing can be a very satisfying but also a physically demanding job and an emotionally demanding job, that as nurses reached a certain age, they were going to start retiring. And it caused a bit of a panic, because when we looked at the pipeline of new students and new people coming into the profession, we're concerned that we would see, if demographics can be used as an indicator or a metric for forecasting, we're going to see a huge drop-off of current nurses and not enough coming in to take care of the patients that need them. So one of the things that we really did well as a state, we worked with the community college systems and with the state government, and were able to find ways to encourage more students to come into the nursing field, and we saw that happen in the middle of this decade. And then the recession happened. No one forecast what was going to happen in late 2008, and unfortunately, you know, the results were that many nurses who were thinking about retiring stayed. Some had spouses who lost their jobs, and they came back into the workforce. So we didn't have that turnover that we thought we would have. And unfortunately, we had a lot of new grad nurses who were looking for jobs that were not as available. And now the problem is that as we slowly get back onto the economic track and those nurses start retiring, new grads have stopped going into the programs again because there weren't as many jobs available. So it really, you know, sometimes requires you to think through and have a plan B. As well as you can forecast and as well as it seems logically that these things are going to happen, life happens while you're planning, and you have to have another plan.
Well, I think that's always some of the challenges that outside factors make, or, you know, or business make in terms of what's going on in their business, that, you know, great plans, but you have to be, you have to have plan B, I guess is the best answer. Always have a plan B. You know, you mentioned a little bit about planning with the state, and I know you're the vice chair of the State Workforce Investment Board. Tell us a little bit about that, what you're doing, and some of the great things that are happening.
Well, I'd be happy to, because it's not a well-known or universally known group, and it's a fairly new group. Under Governor LePage, he's restructured the old Maine Jobs Council. People might be more familiar with that, but in a nutshell, the state of Maine, like every state, receives federal dollars, millions of federal dollars every year to be applied to the retraining and upgrading of skills for Maine citizens who've lost their jobs or who want to get into a more challenging or lucrative position. So the federal government, through the Workforce Investment Act, sends these federal dollars into the various states. And the role of the State Workforce Investment Board is to oversee how those dollars get utilized and how they get spent in the state of Maine.
And so some of the challenges with divvying up that money or being able to use it in an effective way have been, and what are some of the things you're looking at to overcome those challenges?
Well, as an example, how much of that money should be spent on direct training versus applying career center? We're blessed in the state of Maine to have some great career centers available in many of the communities across the state, and they do a great job of helping people post jobs, look for jobs, create a resume, you know, do all those kinds of things that help you find work, but that's not really hard training. You're bringing your skills with you, and there's an assistance in trying to apply those skills elsewhere and find a new job. But one of the challenges that we have, to your question, is trying to figure out how much is appropriate to be spent on those kinds of necessary services versus how much should actually be earmarked and targeted towards hardcore training. So as an example, let's just say we had a business that moved here from another state and was looking for welders and was having a difficult time finding welders. Some of those dollars can be used and should be used to help train people who are unemployed and have a proclivity for and an aptitude for being a welder. And if we as a state using those dollars can supply that training, then it makes it much more likely that that business would relocate here because there's a trained workforce. So it's a challenge because you try to figure out how to divvy it up, how to use the dollars wisely because they're not unlimited, and there's always competition for those dollars. So the challenge is with anything, just like your household budget, how do I take what money we have and apply it in such a way that I meet most of the needs and prioritize correctly?
No, I think it's a critical piece of, you know, trying to look forward into the future of how we can grow any state, any place in the country. And those dollars, with everything going on in Washington, probably is going to be either cut or, you know, they may not be cut. It's just an unknown, correct, in terms of what will happen?
Well, you know, there's always there's always that unknown because nothing is forever. So I think one of the things that we can do as a board and as a state is to make sure that every dollar counts, that it's not spent frivolously, and that it's not spent on overhead when it could go directly to training. So, I mean, trying to make every dollar count because you never do know what's going to happen during tough budgetary times. And I think it makes a huge difference in the ability for the state to try to keep businesses here and attract businesses from other places. One of the things that we can't tell new business people who are looking at Maine is that we have, you know, lowest energy costs. We know we don't. Or that you're on the way to somewhere else. We're really not. We're kind of the end of the line before you hit Canada. You know, we can't tell them that it's a warm weather state, but we can tell them we have a great workforce and it's a well-trained workforce and that the state invests in that workforce and that that's a major component of your business. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for that as a competitive advantage because you are competing. You're competing to keep the businesses you have and you're competing to attract new ones here.
No, it's very true, and I think that this is a critical piece of where you can see government and private industry come together to make sure that it's working in conjunction with each other to try to make things happen. You know, we had Jean Paquette on the show a few weeks ago, and she talked about how the state is looking to have and build a better partnership with the employers of the state. And I think this is, again, a key piece to what needs to be done to move forward here, not only in the state, but to move forward of getting the people that we need here in the right employment mix.
Yeah, I'm personally a guy who has had one of his two kids move out of state in search of employment. And many, many parents in Maine have that same experience. And I think a dream for many parents would be to have their kids stay right here because they found the right job, the right employment, have a future here. So I think it's critical not just for those of us who are here and are here by choice, but for those who are coming behind us and who we want to stay here.
No, well, thank you very much, Kevin, for being on the show today. Great insight into the medical profession and some of the challenges that are going on, especially in the recruiting end. I appreciate the case studies and so forth. So I want to thank you very much for being on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, David. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.